Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to After Class with Dominic Mueller. Welcome. Hi, guys. I hope you missed me. I bet no one's hearing me right now, but hey. No, there is like at least four people. I know who you are. Don't worry about it. Welcome. Welcome to the show. We're at the back of the topic of video games, and what better topic to talk about than what game engine you should use. And if you are a completely video game illiterate, let me give you a little rundown, right? Video games are made with a game engine. This is the backbone, or what dictates what the computer displays on the screen and what the inputs are and all that kind of stuff. There's a bunch of different types of engines out there. Personally, with my video games that I've made in the past, the one I usually go to is Godot, even though I've only used it for, like, say, 8 months, about, give or take. I've tried other ones, like Game Maker? Yeah, Game Maker. And even for school purposes, they're used the terrible, terrible, terrible Java. It was JavaFX. God, I hated that one so much. But I digress. But I know which one you shouldn't use. This is a bit out of date with the news, but Unity. I'm sure if you've touched a computer and you've played a video game at one point, you've heard the name Unity. And it's getting a lot of backlash nowadays. Oh, let me tell you. So, a little pre-context and all that. The former CEO steps down a few years ago, and out comes the CEO of EA takes the hold of Unity. And I don't know if you've played EA games, but first of all, they're about $80 for the exact same video game. I don't know how they get away with it, but for some reason they do. The best game they have is Plants vs. Zombies, and even still, that's not even their game. They bought the license for that one. So I don't know how they're still afloat, but either way, Unity has a new CEO, right? I forget his name, and I don't want to give that snot stain any more publicity than he needs. But recently, comes out that they add extra charges to their Unity. So normally all it is just you buy a license, and I think it's like yearly, and then you just have it. It's just a yearly fee. Bada bing, and you have all the rights to your game and all that kind of stuff. What they did. They decided that, oh yeah, once your game gets popular, once it has about like half a million downloads, we will start taking money. It was not that much, only 20 cents per install. Now here's the kicker. People don't know, and they didn't explain that there are other ways you can install your game, aka illegally, right? Without any money required. So the main problem with it was that, say for example, someone hated your game or hated you, right? What they could do now is they could probably keep downloading the game from extra sources and just tank the sales. Just slowly draining the money out of your game. For free, mind you. Other things is just basically they want their money. You know, they're like indie developers. They have a hard time paying rent. It's just how it is. And them taking more money is an absolutely scummy thing to do. Of course, they immediately backpedal. Even kicking out their CEO, mind you. The guy, the EA guy, yeah, he's gone now. Like 2 weeks ago, he got booted. But people still hate it. And the fantastic thing about this is that now more people are trying out different game engines that are a little less popular, more obscure, like Godot and Game Maker. It's fantastic. I love when the populace really revolts back against terrible, terrible decisions like this. I love the fact that even though they backpedaled, the population, the public, did not like it, so they just booted them. Everyone found alternatives, and eventually they're going to be drained of even more money. So, what are we talking about today? So in the light of this, I decided, hey, let's give some light to some neat little indie games. Some fun little indie games. We'll rate them. I'll go through them based on popularity. We'll start with the most popular and we'll work our way down. No matter what, you probably have never heard of any of these. So I'm going to try to go as brief as possible and just let you hear the delicious tunes from them. Starting with the most popular out of the list, Hades. Now, if you never heard of Hades, it is a dungeon crawler. Now, a dungeon crawler obviously has procedurally generated levels, aka just like they pull from our library of different rooms and they just slap them on there randomly. Each playthrough is unique, which adds to the replay value. But the actual plot is more, way more interesting. You play as the son of Hades. Go figure. It's all based on Greek mythology, specifically the Hades and Persephone myth, if you've heard of it. Basically, Hades fancies Persephone, the daughter of Demeter, who is the god of, what was it again? The seasons, I think? Yeah, the seasons. And then Demeter, the Persephone is the goddess of, what was it? Spring. There you go. This is all just coming back to me. A bit rusty with my grade 9 AP experience, so bear with me. But basically, in the old myth, he kidnaps her, but in the other myth, it's kind of like a middle finger to her mom, in a kind of way. It kind of just got rebranded as such. So, you know, either way you take it. They're both down there now, and Demeter's so sad and pissed that she casts an eternal winter. Great going on her part. And then, that's where you pick up. You are the son of Hades and Persephone. The thing is, the very interesting thing is that Zagreus, the god of blood, and the character you play as, is not touched up upon in these myths that they pull from. There's like one reference in a very obscure book about the god of blood. So they had to create an entire storyline based on this rebellious teenager who wants to break through his dad's domain and get to the surface. It's a very fun game and has a lot of stank and charm and pizzazz to it. The characters themselves, oh my goodness, they are very well drawn if you know what I'm saying. Wink, wink. And the gameplay itself is fun enough. I mean, like, it's a good podcast game once you get into it, but at the very beginning, oh, you're gonna have a lot of fun dying a bunch of times. Because it's a rogue-lite, not a rogue-like. The difference being that the more you play a rogue-lite, L-I-T-E, you are able to upgrade your characters in between runs. And a rogue-like, all your, everything that you've worked up towards is gone, and you have to start all the way over again. But the main objective of this game is to get to the surface and hopefully find your mother who has abandoned her husband, Hades, and get to the surface. The soundtrack is absolutely gorgeous. Somehow, Darren Korb is able to mix prog, metal, rock, folk, even. He puts a theremin in there. It's crazy. It's beautiful. You have to listen to it. And I'll let you do that right now. Fantastic work, Korb. My boy. All right. So let me give you a little rundown, right? The next song you will hear was actually recorded in a damn live orchestra. That's how much money it got for his name, apparently. Because it just slaps at the end of the day, right? It's got everything that you need in a metal, prog metal, even organ metal. I can hear the... That's definitely Doom right there. That's Doom reminiscent right there. But basically, what instruments, other than the cool theremin, does he use? That's the main thing, right? The little twangy thing, the little twangy lute kind of thing, is a Let me see if I'm butchering this or not. Oh my goodness, I'm going to be ripped apart. The bouzouki. The bouzouki. That's a Greek lute, practically. It's a nice little stringed instrument that gives it that kind of oldish, folky sound. Not old in the sense of, like, ye old country boy, but more so just, like, old as in, like, ancient, back in, like, 1 AD. Let's hear this nice little orchestral tune. A lot of these are actually pretty orchestra-driven. More so because they're meant to be more sentimental, and the next ones are going to be more tactical-based. I hope you're ready for that. And that is what we call ambience. Ladles and germs. Fantastic game, right? If you're going to play any game from this list, this is the one. It's a little bit more expensive, but all of them are like $20 anyway, so just give it a shot. What are you waiting for? Come on. Play my games. Anyway, next up we got Slay the Spire. For all you card nerds out there, the ones that hem and haw at deliciously sealed blue eyes white dragons, then you love this game because it's reminiscent of that, because it's a deck building game. But not only a deck building game, it's a new type of genre. Guess what? It's a roguelike as well. Have fun with that. Is it a roguelite? Is it a roguelike? I don't know. Because you do unlock cards, but at some point it becomes arbitrary because you unlock them anyway, right? But let's run it down. There's not much of a plot to speak of, right? All there is that you can play between four different characters who are all trapped in an infinite time loop, thus being replayable for ad infinitum. Also, there is a gigantic whale that gives you a boon at the start of the game, which I think is pretty funny. He goes, choose your card. I just like him. He's a funny little character. I think he's named Neil. I haven't played that game in a while. I need to get back to that game, honestly. And all those other ones. You got Inscription, you got all sorts of deck building. The one I enjoy, what was it called? There was one that was published by the same people who made Don't Starve. What was it called again? I forget. But the point is that it had an interesting mechanic where not only can you fight creatures, but you can also debate them. And the cards would do different things based on whether you're in a fight or... You actually had two different decks. One for fighting and one for negotiating. Which I thought was pretty neat. But how does this game, how does Slay the Spire hold up? So you have three zones, right? Each of them have different encounters, kind of like procedural generation. And you have different cards that do different things. Some characters are better at poisoning, and some are better at blowing things up with their orbs, their flying orbs. Pick the robot every time. I love the robot. The Automatron is my favorite one. He's just a little dude that gained sentience, and now he shoots orbs. He shoots orbs at creatures. But also you got the guy with the sword. He's also pretty good. And you got the lady with the different stances. So each character has different techniques that they use. So the green character, if you look up the game, if you want to, it's up to you, uses poison. And poison does damage over time, as most games do. And the sword guy has a more interesting mechanic where he trades his HP for better payoff later down the road. He's more of a risk taker. And then the robot, he shoots orbs. He shoots orbs. They shoot orbs. I love that. You have different orbs. You can shoot lightning orbs. You can shoot frost orbs. You can shoot energy orbs. You can shoot dark orbs. I mean, like, the possibilities are really off the charts with that character right there. And the last character, the purple character, the Watcher, she uses stances, where you can switch in and out of different stances that do different things. Like, for example, Wrath, that does double damage, but also the enemies do double damage to you. It's just interesting how you can have so little cards at your disposal. There's only, like, 40 cards per character. But the synergies between them is different every time. And every single game that I'm going to list here including the third one, has what we call in the biz replay value. Well, basically just replay value is how replayable the games are. And if it won't describe it well enough, I have over 200 hours in Hades. Same with Slay the Spire. I think that's only 150 hours. And I think 70 with the third game. These games, my friends, are very addictive. And you have to be careful, because if an assignment is going to come up, and you find one of these games lying on the street, who knows what will happen? You'll be in a cave until like 3 a.m., and you're going to wake up in a daze thinking what happened, and then, oh no, that thesis is due tomorrow. What are you going to do? I'm sorry if I put a little anxiety into any of you. I did not mean to do that. I'm so sorry. But the music in this game is interesting. I think it's just more orchestral bass, which is fine. It's not my cup of tea, per se. It's got no electric guitars or any cool boingy boingy wah-wah instruments, but just take a listen. Maybe you'll enjoy it more than me.
How'd you like that? Did it tickle your earbuds? I hope so. I don't know what voice I'm doing, but it's, we'll see. We'll see what the next game is. I am definitely not stalling for time right now, so let me give you a little brief overview of the ascension mechanic in most of these games. Because the thing is that once you play this game, or all these games, a bunch of times, it gets boring, right? You beat it. You know how to do it. You're just gonna go through the motions. That's why they add ascension to these games. One moment. Alright. So, the general gist is that when you beat the game, cool. Now try to do it with half health. Can you do it? Might as well try. With Hades, it's a little bit more specific, since you have to, you can augment it based on what you want to do. You can add like extra health to the enemies, you can add more enemies, you can make them faster, you can give them temp HP, that like you have to hit them once in order to get their actual HP, or you can just add like extra little mods to them. And with Slay the Spire, it's way more rigid. It's like a ladder that you have to crawl up and try to get to the higher levels. It's slowly adding more mechanics as you go on and more curses to your deck, as it were. And that leads us to our last and final game. Ladies and gentlemen, bring onto the stage Into the Breach. Now, Into the Breach is an interesting game because it's literally just chess. It is just chess, except you replace the chess pieces with mechs, gigantic robots, and bugs. Gigantic bugs. Now, you're wondering, Dominic, what the hell are you talking about? Bugs? Bugs? Yes, bugs. They added bugs to chess. Now let me explain. So the general gist of this game, the main plot hook of this game, is that, you guessed it, you're in a time loop, except you are more in a voluntary time loop because you are trying to save multiple Earths on countless infinite different timelines that are all being invaded by bugs. Yes. There is a hive in this core of the Earth that you need, and you and your robot pals need to figure out and eliminate bugs. Now, what is the gameplay loop, you may ask? Well, you control robots and you kill bugs, but it's a little bit complicated than that. See, you can set them on fire. You can set the bugs on fire. You can set the bugs. You can poison the bugs. You can poison the bugs if you want to. You can do damage to the bugs with the poison. You can throw the bugs off a cliff, or you can push the bugs onto other bugs that are trying to burrow out of the surface. You see, these modules within the game are sequential, so every round new bugs will appear, and you have to squish them with your giant mech boots. Of course, there's about, say, 18 different teams that you can have, each with their own separate abilities.
Like, for example, one of the mechs that allow you to freeze the other bugs. Yes, you can freeze the other bugs, in fact. And the other bugs will try to break out their bug brethren out of the icy crepasse that you put them in. Of course, you don't have to feel bad for the bugs. You can commit as much bug genocide as you'd like, because they are trying to wipe out cities that are as big as them. It takes place on a 8x8 grid, you see. Anything outside of that grid you don't care about. They just focus on you right now. And you can punch the bugs, you can set the bugs on fire, you can... There is one specific mech that I love. It is the best mech out of all of them. The best mech team has to be... I think they're called the Cataclysm. Where, basically, you use... One of the mechs allows you to burrow holes in the ground around them. It cracks the ground. And when if you punch the ground where the bugs are, the ground underneath them crumbles and breaks and they fall into the pit. Unfortunately, it doesn't work with flying bugs. Those flying bugs are a little pesky and they float at the top of the surface. Now, you might be wondering, is that just it? Is you just kill bugs? Yes, you do, but you can also upgrade your mechs to kill more bugs. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. The bugs get more powerful the more islands you go to. And the thing is, you only need to go to two islands. So anything out of that, as I mentioned before, is more of a ascension mechanic. So you can go to all four islands, but they get progressively harder. But your mechs get progressively powerful if you play your cards right. Not cards, that was the other game. This is chess. If you get checkmate with the bugs. I hope I'm not wearing out the word bugs right now. But the main gist is upgrading your mechs, killing the bugs, saving the people, and wiping out their hive, which is the final level. Now, what else? What else can I talk about this game? About this game about killing bugs? Well, how about their soundtrack? Let's put that. I think the soundtrack is perfect for this game, even though it's not necessarily my favorite video game soundtrack. I think it works perfectly for a stressful kind of... Because it's not action-packed, right? You can undo turns. You can take as long as you'd like on one turn, on one round with your mechs, right? You can take as long as you'd like, so it's more of a strategy. It's more of a strategy, like, intensified soundtrack with the instruments never really concluding and a bunch of other, like, neat little tricks that they use. Violins, little gooshy-gooshy-wooshy-wooshy synths and all that kind of stuff. It's a very fun, very nice if you have an assignment coming up because you spent until 3 a.m. playing the game. And you can spend more time listening to the soundtrack while you cram for your next exam or midterm or whatever you got. Take a listen. And that, my friends, is Into the Breach. It is a pretty fun game, and I forgot to mention the mechanic also, where you can bring, if you die or you win, you can bring at least one crew member that was on your little bug-killing rampage on into the next run that you do, which I think is pretty neat, because you kind of build an attachment to them, you can name them. It's kind of neat. And we're almost at time, ladies and gentlemen. I know, it's so sad to see you go, all of you, all 10 of you now, I assume. But let me end you off on a very high octane note. You see, in Hades, there is a way you can get a third phase with the final boss. Now, this song does go hard, and I'm scared to share it with all of you, but it's a must. I have to. It's called The Unseen Ones. It's the extension to the boss theme that I've showed you earlier on that section, and it does go hard. So, I'll see you all next week, and I hope that your midterms, like always, are as fruitful as possible. Good night!